Hello everyone, sit down, turn your mobile phones off. particularly you, Pella. Right, just to introduce myself, my name is Christian Orr Hansen. I suppose one of the main reasons I'm here is I manage an artist called Titor, but I spent 11 years at the UK version of Coda called PRS. I did 8 years for the US version called PMI, and I've been very international. I think I was the first international person to come to Spot 13 years ago. I was the international contingent. So I'm a long fan of this this festival. And I've got a nice little bunch of people here, and we're going to talk about publishing, and it's the maybe the new source, the expanding source, the creative and financial end of the business as the record companies die off and get swallowed up by the internet. But I'll just introduce you to our guest. To my right is Pelle Liddell, who's the European A&R executive for Universal Music Publishing. Pelle, for me, is probably the most, probably the best publishing A&R person in Scandinavia, and he has been for a long time. He set up a company called Merlin Songs a few years ago that became a real indie powerhouse, and he has a fantastic role within Universal as a publisher, and definitely, I think, the best A&R guy in Scandinavia. 500 kroner. to his right is my old friend Jens Marcus Wegener. We've been buddies for a long time. Jens is becoming a real power. He's from a company called AMV Telpa. He's a great guy. He runs a very strong and innovative independent publishing company based in Germany. And he's very much an international guy as well. And he's going to talk a lot about what he does in Germany, but not just for the German market, but internationally as well. And then to the far right is my relatively new friend, Rémi Perron, from a company called La Maison du Production in Paris. And he is, his company, several things that they do, but one of the things they do is they find, source and clear music for advertising. He works very closely with agencies. They also have songs written. And if you don't know much about the sync, what we call the sync market, this is very much becoming a new part of the world in which we live in. I was in Los Angeles recently for an A&R convention, and there was almost no major label record company A&R guys there because they don't exist anymore. But the A&R people who were there were music supervisors for film, TV and advertising and games, and they're at the cutting edge of music at the moment because they can create opportunities for artists, for songwriters, like record companies can't do anymore. So it's a very, very important part of what, you know, the future and our current business currently is. So I'm just going to open it up. We're just going to talk about little things that we've done in the past. But I'm going to start with Pelle. And Pelle, can you just, you know, just give us a very quick rundown of a couple of things that you've done where you've been able to create opportunities for either artists or writers in an early perspective?
Well, as a publisher, I like to move in early. I really don't care if they have a record deal, so that's probably a bonus if they don't. For instance, a couple of years ago, about 5 years ago, I signed this Norwegian writer called Hannah Sørvold, and who I still admire a lot. What I did was that she wanted to release her own record, so I basically funded the whole thing so she could release it and get those songs out of her system. And then we started looking at trying to get some cuts, international cuts, and after, I think, 1 year, she had an American Idol song with Catherine McPhee, the runner-up, and that started off her career. In Norway, she was totally overlooked. No one wanted to sign her. She tried as an artist, she tried with various publishers. No one wanted to touch her, and I couldn't believe why, because she's an excellent songwriter.
And she's a babe as well.
Yes, she's a babe as well. And since 2005, when I signed her, she's had probably 110, 120 cuts worldwide, 5-6 million records sold combined, and she has a career. And I definitely feel a part.
And Jens, is there something that you just want to bring to everyone's attention about one of the ways that you work in Germany?
For me, one interesting point about Germany is that we have a very strong market in terms of sales. It's now, I think, third largest market in the world, or fourth, you know, competing with UK. But on the other hand, there's a lot of creativity around in Germany. And on the other hand, I still feel that a lot of German writers are not so self-confident. So my goal was really to open up international channels for well-talented writers. And I think this could serve as a model for other territories too, like Scandinavia, for example. Denmark, I think, is getting strong, but, you know, Norway and especially Sweden has always had a reputation of bringing up very creative people who make their success outside. And one thing I found out was because if you're living in a small country, I think it's the same with Denmark, most of the people cannot live from their music if they just concentrate on their own country. So they are actually going outside, try to compete, and this actually works with songwriters also. So this is one thing which is for me very, very interesting, to open up those international channels.
Cool. And Remy, it's nice to have Remy here. Remy, can you just tell a little bit about what you do, and maybe a couple of different either young artists or writers or people that you work with, and open up their sort of opportunities?
Yeah, okay. Thank you for having me invited here. And something I would like to say to you is that the advertising business is dealing with creativity all the time, because we have to make our customers dream about things and then produce those things, and the people who produce things are artists mainly. It's a matter of films or music or whatsoever. So we have to find artists for the major companies through our agencies, and we, for the music business, are we decided that in our company we would be an interface between the artists and the advertising companies and the final customers, which is very important, because people can dream about what you do if you have artists, if you are or if you manage artists, but they don't know how to get to you, and it's something very tricky in fact. And there's so many information on the web that you cannot get to the right information. That's something we discussed previously with another guy. And so we're here to make that happen, that the artist meets the customer, and in music. So my business to do that is to make deals of music licensing for brands, and that's how we met, Christian and I. As we said, we were friends, and I hope it's gone along, but I'm sure it will.
Remy's a very, very nice man, because he got Tartre a big advert in France, so he's a very, very nice man.
So we got Tartre, yeah. We got Tartre, and we got pretty big songs being synced, and we deal that. We've been dealing. Well, should I say talk about money or not?
No,
it's just a matter of. Well, we've been syncing, you know, like Funky Town from Steven Greenberg, or it's now over 6 years, or Arriva, which is a new company, and we've been doing very good. You know, it's a very win-win situation now for both, for Greenberg and for Arriva. And the way we think about the music being used in advertising can be also to, you know, allow you to bring to us some new artists that need to be known. And this is a way to make good deals too, because it's not the biggest deals, but it's deals that make your artists have being seen, being broadcasted on TV, on radio, etc. So this is,
and it's not necessarily the money. I mean, interesting. I saw a great presentation by EA Games in America, where they traditionally they're one of the powerhouses of the games market, and they don't pay very good money for having music in their programs. But they did a presentation about, I can't remember which the game was, and as part of the game, you could get a link within the game to get a free download of one of the songs that was featured in the game. And as part of the deal, so they licensed the track from the record company and the publishers, didn't give them very much money, but in return to the record company, they gave them 2 million email addresses of people that had downloaded that song of that artist. And they gave them the database and said, here, that's yours. Now go and run with it if you want. There's 2 million people that have heard your artist. There's a marketing opportunity right there. What price you can put on that and what they did with it is amazing. But, you know, the artist wasn't a very well-known artist in the first place, but there's an amazing marketing opportunity for that artist by being featured in that game, by the record company being given those 2 million email addresses. The whole world opens up there. I mean, there's a marketing campaign right there. And I think that's the sort of the, you know, the every opportunity is different. And part of that is, as we were trying to describe, that the new world that we live in is it used to be very record company heavy, dominated by you make a record, you go to radio, and that's how you make it happen. I mean, there's a John Lewis advert at the moment in the UK, which has sort of become a, you know, one of those kind of ads. But basically, they were trying to sync. John Lewis is a famous department store in England. And they're originally using a Carole King song. They were trying to sync it into the ad. And 2 days before the ad was due to run, they changed their mind. And in the end, they did a cover of a Billy Joel song with Fife Dangerfield from the Guillemots singing it. So 2 days before, they completely changed their mind. Now, the Guillemots have probably had like a top 20 album. They've been around for a long time, very cool. This ad is so stunning. It's just one of those beautiful ads where time suspends when you see it. The music is great. It's a fantastic song. You know, his version of the song has now gone top 10 in the UK. It's about number 6. His album's just gone top 10 in the UK. Billy Joel's Greatest Hits album is about to come out, and that's going to go top 10 in the UK. And it's kind of a win-win situation for everyone. And there's an amazing synergy, and everyone kind of benefits out of it. There aren't that many ads that are that big that have that kind of effect. But the beauty is the agency, you know, they didn't even know who the Guillemots were or Fife Dangerfield. They didn't give a shit. But it was just a great version of a great song. It was a great idea, and that was it. That's all they wanted. And I'm sure Remy would agree. There are times when agencies probably come to him and they want the Beatles or the Rolling Stones for something. But it's his job sometimes to say, well, you haven't got the budget for that and you're not going to get it, but here's something very cool. Is that one of the things that you end up doing?
Eventually, because the people's dream can be based to a reality of money and not enough having enough money, but many other possibilities are available. So it's a huge world of music that we can access and we can offer. And this is for our customers. We can make them discover things they didn't know, but suddenly they love, and suddenly they love things, and they we talked about the Beatles, and it was a huge amount of money, but you can have that, and I love that, but I can't afford it. Yes, you can. It's that amount of money, and it's a 10. And this is how things go, and we can have other partner deals, like having less money involved, but credits. When you broadcast an advertising with a credit, when you have a website linked to a YouTube, iTunes, buying link or whatever.
Yeah, and that's the other thing about, you know, syncs, is that when you had your music on a sync 20 years ago, people would go, that's a great ad. I wonder who's the music on that. You wouldn't be able to find out. You know, you phone up the TV station and say, we're too busy. You phone the advertising agency and you get the receptionist. You say, well, I don't know who it is. Nowadays, I mean, you can literally watch it. If you track iTunes sales, you can see an ad go out, and then 2 hours later, you see people Googling. You can see the activity on Google. Has anyone ever seen, what's it called? It's Google Trends? Check out Google Trends sometimes. If an ad has a certain amount of activity, you can actually see Google Trends. And it actually pinpoints certain things that happen. So you can actually see a spike in activity on Google. And that means people have Googled someone, they've Googled the ad or the name of the client, whatever. They find the track, they go to iTunes, they might go to, you know, an illegal site, but we won't talk about that. But you actually see a spike instantly, and that's the other beauty of what this is you don't have to be from there. You can be from anywhere. The track can be from, I took a kid from the Faroe Islands and got him signed in America. You know, it's one of the smallest places on the planet. And nobody really gave a fuck that where he was from. It was cool, it was actually part of the story. But that's the age that we're in, is that a lot of borders have been broken down in terms of international things. And there are ways of getting yourselves out there.
And also the traditional way of pitching songs. I mean, one of the first tasks I faced when I came to Universal was looking from an indie point of view, working with a major. And since I represent the UK roster and the Scandinavian roster, I realized that none of the UK writers and the managers were actually active outside the UK. So I basically set up meetings with each writer and manager and asked them, what's your plan B? What do you mean? What plan B? If you don't get a cut with Sugar Babes or Kylie, whatever, what do you do there? And they were like, oh no, America. Yeah, well, your songs are not American, you know, you write pop music, you know, for the rest of the world. So some of those guys were heavily in the red in terms of advance. They had, you know, far away from recouping. And I said, you know, there are tons of acts in Germany, like, you know, the No Angels, the pop stars and everything there, and they are desperate for great songs. And I think that song and that song and that song can work. And I pitch it to Germany, and they're like, fine. Some of those guys now bring in, I would say, 90% of the revenues from GSA. And other guys have fantastic careers in Asia, Korea and Japan. So instead of them sitting there waiting for, you know, for Joe Kentish to call them at, you know, Mercury or, you know, with his new artist, they're actually getting, you know, 10, 20, 30 songs cut per year in these territories, and they make money. They make a living. Yeah. I really don't care where the money comes from. I just want to create careers. I actually, like you said, the world, you know, songwriters had to look at their craft and their business on a worldwide basis.
Yeah, there's a song title that's called You Get Me, which was on his second album, which is a beautiful song. And Taito and I always used to joke that we get Whitney Houston to record the song. It was kind of like our little thing. Whitney Houston should record that. And I used to know Whitney's old manager until she met the crack addicts that she ended up ruining her life. But we won't go into that. So anyway, to cut a long story short, Taito was producing a big French artist last year, and I suggested that she should cut the song. Her name is Norway, and Taito produced the record, did the track, it went number one in France, that was all cool. And then I thought, fuck, you know, so it's worked on Taito's record, it's worked on Norway's record, so I pitched it to a big Italian artist called Mina. So she cut the song with Seal as a duet, right? Because she's only big in Italy, so she's not affected by Norway in France, Taito in Denmark or America. And so now my concept is now, hey, it's a proven great song, and it's a hit, it's a top 10 radio hit in Italy.
Multicuts.
Yeah.
It's old school music publishing.
And it's old school, but you know, they don't care, but they're sort of significant in the vibe of this. And then the funniest thing, I've got to say this funny story. Taito was doing a gig in London about 2 months ago, and a friend of mine who's worked with Sting, used to produce Sting, a guy called Kipper, turned up. He's a Taito fan. So we're hanging out afterwards, and he's going, oh yeah, man, that song of Taito's, You Get Me, it's fucking great. And I'm like, yeah. I know you always liked it. He goes, yeah, I sat down in New York with Whitney Houston's A&R guy, and I played it to him, and I said, you should cut this fucking song. And I was like, God, we got this far away from getting the song cut by Whitney Houston. Anyway. But, I think that, you know, part of all of this focus is that, you know, I believe, you know, I'm a manager and I'm a record company as well, but I need to create opportunities for my artists. And because we don't have a lot of money, right, we find other ways to do that. And part of that is pitching songs for Sing, getting people to cut other songs, doing co-writes for other artists. You know, Tobias, you know, I manage an artist called Tobias Froberg. And really, the most Sync song we got of his was from his first album, which sold about 3.5 copies in Sweden, which was a great record. And I managed to get the rights back for the record from the Lunatic record company that owned it. And there's one song on that album called Don't You Worry About a Thing. And that album cost about £3,000 to make, right? And we've now had 7 ads on the same song. It's like Merrill Coffee in Denmark, it's Austrian Telecom in Austria, We just got it on a Greek advert. But it's a great song. It always was in the first place. And we've managed to find little opportunities. And his career has developed from that because people have found his records, because there's an artist career as well. He's a producer. But that song has its own life. And it was made in 2004. And it still has, it actually has more life this year than it's ever had before. But Jens Margaret, I just want to talk a little bit about, because you're based in Germany, but you've not just been working in Germany for a while. I mean, how did you, get yourself and your roster outside of Germany? What's the things that you've been doing?
Well, maybe I should just give you a little story about how I started, because I don't know how many people in here are artists or writers. So I think there are some artists who write their own songs. So it's probably a little bit interest also to hear about what to do, when you just write for your own band. But because when I started in the independent scene. So my concept was I found bands which I found very interesting, bands who actually wrote their own songs, and I offered them promotion. So I learned how to place music in media. I did radio promotion, I did press promotion. We had a very successful club promotion section in our company. So our concept was developing opportunities for the bands and eventually made them big so that maybe they started on an independent label and maybe then a bigger label wanted to take over or a major company wanted to take over. So we were very early, I learned how important it is to create a vision. So I mean, this, of course, there's a quality of this song. And you have a vision, a band which is writing their own songs, that you should always look into the vision. You should have like a plan, a master plan. What do you want to achieve? And I think this is still so important that instead of thinking of, well, I could get a big deal, you should always think about, I'm enjoying to be here and to watch a lot of bands. And I have to say, there's a lot of bands I saw at the Spot Festival where I was really happy to see that they have their own vision and it's really good quality of work. And sometimes I think the modern type of publisher can help to drive it into the right direction. So, I'm still with color that sometimes you have people who develop in a very good develop into a good songwriter, and you realize that the quality of a band is maybe more based on the quality of the songs, and then you see that there are people who can really write good songs. And what we have started to do is we try to form alliances. So, I'm traveling a lot, I meet up colleagues, other people, and find opportunities. If I think I have somebody who writes good songs, let's say I meet up with Pelle, and then Pelle says, well, I have somebody who's a fantastic top liner, meaning he writes good melodies, and I have somebody who's really coming up with some good tracks. And then this is also part of our business, that we try to connect people who could fit. And it's better to create a new fantastic song when somebody has 50% or 33% instead of always trying, to push your thing through, and it doesn't really work. So I think really part of modern publishing is to form alliances, to find partners who could work, to make sure that bands understand. Sometimes they are really good, but they're missing one good song, or there is a good song and you think, well, maybe you work a little bit on the lyrics, on the top line, that you try to help them to understand that this is good for them if they develop in that direction. So I mean, there's so many possibilities, and by going more international, I found that this is one thing which fits everywhere, that if you join together, if you try to come up with the best, it doesn't matter whether you're Swedish, German, Danish, American, you have to be more open about that.
Remy, there was something that we were talking about yesterday. I just want to talk a little bit about cover versions.
Okay.
There's an interesting perspective there.
Yeah, that's something.
Remy, I apologize for my French, so.
Sometimes the customers love, well, we think sometimes we can bring a song to our customers, but the way the song is done wouldn't fit exactly the needs. For instance, heavy metal song would be great, but won't fit the perfume advertising because it's too far from the both universes won't match together. So the film is very smooth and the music is very rough. But the song is good. So we decide to do a cover. And this is where we're interested in you. Because we think, and this is something we are trying to push forward, that the artists that you present, that you're in charge of, are the best cover makers ever. Because they have their own styles. And we will find in them the style we need for the product. I'm afraid I use that word. And the song is great, your artist's style is great, those match perfectly, and this is an other way of making a living out of music in advertising business.
Yeah, and quite often maybe the advertising agency can't pay for the original master because they're being held to ransom by the big act.
Obviously.
But they would entertain a young act doing a great cover. Because you know, every act has their own spin on things, and it's not necessarily whether you force to do something, but you know, Taito does this amazing version of Great Balls of Fire, and that's something that he's discovered and recorded and did on his own, but he kind of owns it, do you know what I mean? I think every act has maybe a song which they love that they play, they don't necessarily play it live every night, but there may be something where they brought something to a song that they've made it their own, which then could open a whole opportunity for them.
And there is, we had, with Taito, we had the case of something else that Taito covered himself.
Yes. Yeah.
Because, well, the customer was so happy with Taito, but for the ringtone, don't ask me why, it was too loud, too fast, whatever. So he did a slower version, like an unplugged version. Yeah. And we talked about that with Christian, and we said, okay, are we going to pay for that version? We're not sure if it's going to be used or... And finally, Christian decided to produce this version. Finally, we didn't use it for a reason I don't know. But this is also some... Your artist can be the best... what do you say?
Yeah, interpreter.
Interpreter of songs. Of their songs or of others' songs. And that's... You know, their style will fit our products. And the world's songs, we'll find songs that will fit our product. Because in the song's lyrics, we try to find matching points. In the energy of the way we produce the covers, we try to find matching points too. And this is how we can sell these things. This is how we can sell that to our customers. We have to explain them. They are rational people. They don't know anything about music. We just have to explain them that...
They're like A&R guys at record companies, aren't they? Yeah. They know nothing about music.
they have to be, you know, ensure that it's going to work. Why is it going to be working? Because this artist that did this slider, and this way it's working for your product, and it's why it's going to make a whole thing with the film, and the... you know, the emotions in film don't come from the picture itself, except rare exceptions. In my opinion, it comes from the sound, from the music inside.
I think one way of doing it, well, I mentioned Hannah before, what she's doing now is that she's actually doing covers of her own hits that other artists have covered. And now she's doing an acoustic version, which we're funding, which she will release later on this year, which I think is a terrific idea. And it's a great marketing tool for me as a publisher to bring in more gigs to her and future cuts.
And one other point I wanted to make as well, when I started in the business, there was quite a bit of stigma about having your songs in TV and film and advertising. And I think a lot of that has kind of disappeared. And for me, there's several different reasons why. I think it's cooler. I think people understand things a bit more. But I remember having a discussion with Tyson. There's one of his songs which everyone in America wanted to use in movies on his first album. It's called One and Only. And famously, we had it synced in 12 movies, but it got cut out of the scenes in 10 of them. And Taito, you being the typical artist, would say to me, yeah, but, you know, what's the film going to be like, Christian? I mean, you know, is it going to be cool and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And there was one film that we were in called Aquamarine, which was kind of like a youngish pop thing. And he's like, oh, I'm not sure if it's cool to be in it. And I said, look, okay, every person that you know sees this film in the next year, I'll give you $100. Right? So every person that you know sees this film and says, hey, I heard your song in that film, I'll give you $100. And you're okay, deal. Now, the film did okay, but of course, it was aimed at like a 13 to 15 year old audience in America. So no one that he knew ever saw the film. Because the genius of film, and here's the genius of film. If your music is synced into a TV or a film program, if it's great and the film is fucking amazing and it's the biggest film of the year and everything's great and everyone thinks it's cool, everyone knows you're in it. If the film stinks, no one sees it and no one knows it's in it. Tell me where the difference is. I mean, I've turned down stuff before, on behalf of my artist, but generally there is a raison d'etre there somewhere that you need to look at it as to whether or not it's going to damage you or not. I mean, there's a couple of things we've said no to, but there's other things, we try and say yes to every student film that we do. We do a lot of student films because one of the reasons is that I used to lecture at a place called the London International Film School. I wanted to get to know people in TV and film, so I went and did free lectures for them. And in return, I got to know all the students, and I would go and see their end-of-term film competition, and then I would get to know who would become the good ones. And one of them ended up going to work for Steven Spielberg as a producer. Another one became one of the biggest commercials directors in the UK, and another one became a very well-known producer of films in England. Now, because I was just a junior twat in the music business trying to get to meet people in TV and film. But I worked out where they came from. So I was like, students, if they're great, become the next directors. So I spent 5 years going lecturing at this school. And all of those people I met who were good have all become really well-known TV and film people. And that's another way of, you can't always get Mr. Spielberg on the phone, right? But you go and find the next Mr. Spielberg, and he's at a student film place, probably in Copenhagen right now, making a cool student movie. They want some music, they haven't got any money, and you go, yeah, great, you want to use the track? I'll do it for you for nothing. All you've got to do is put a credit at the end saying thank you. That's all I want.
This goes for instance, in Stockholm, we got the Dice company, the guys behind Battlefield 2, all the new concepts, that they're working on now. They're desperate for new music, cutting edge music, and they're collaborating already with us publishers. So given the briefs I get from them, I can then scout and look for the right music out there. Unsigned guys that might do one off deal. I think another thing that we haven't discussed, which I think is really important, is the one off single songwriter deal. That there are a lot of writers out there who I don't think is ready for a fully blown worldwide publishing deal. Those are the guys or women that they're sending me songs, and maybe 1 out of 20 is great. And I usually say, can you, if I get this covered in 3 months, you want to do the single song assignment with me? And this has resulted in several number one records in America and number one records all around the world. So I'm basically creating a career, finding a more or less, I find revenues for them, and obviously I'm making money out of that myself. But I think it's a good business model for both parts.
I mean, it's interesting you mentioned games because I'm not a game player. I'm too old. I can beat you all at some retro games from the 80s, but I can't do anything since. Asteroids and But the interesting thing about Space Invaders, particularly, that's my thing.
You're a great Pong player, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, Tetris. But games, it's really interesting because games all, the first evolution of games all had this kind of high tempo, up tempo, rock soundtrack. But some of the games that I've seen recently, they are like movies, right? And the music they have, I was at the Ivor Novello Awards on Thursday, which is the biggest songwriting awards in the UK and arguably in the world. It's, you know, everyone turns up. For the first year ever in the 55-year history of the Ivor Novellos, they have a game for best music written for a game, an award for the best music written for a game. Because some of these games are unbelievable. And what they're commissioning and what they're bringing for music are singer-songwriter, full-blown scores with orchestras, you know, cool indie rock soundtracks, you know, punk, ska, you know, I mean, it's unbelievable because the games, they're like, it's like the whole gamut of the film industry is the games industry now. And for me, it's opened it up for me because, you know, years ago, every game guy would be like, hey, have you got any like really up-tempo, you know, 120 beats per minute electronica or thrash metal? And I'm like, no. But now it's really interesting that what they're doing. I mean, some of them have these amazing storylines. There's the new is it the Deadwood thing, which I think EA Games have done. The score in that it's like Ennio Morricone. It's absolutely phenomenal. Anyway, we should open it up to the floor, see if there's any questions before we. Stephen King.
Can you think of an instance where a sync has had a detrimental effect on an artist's career?
I mean, I can think of some syncs which I wouldn't have agreed. There's a Bee Gees song that was used recently for a Nappies commercial, but they changed the lyric as well to do it. And I'm not being funny, I used to know the Bee Gees lawyer really well, and I phoned him the moment I saw the ad, you know, and I said, have you seen this ad? And he no longer looks after them. And he was like, I've seen it. He said, that would never happen on my patch. I mean, I can't, anyone else can, I can't think of... Because for me, it's like if it's a bad ad, then maybe no one really sees it. I mean, there might be ones where I don't know. Anyone know? Keith's got one.
Well, Sting objected to "Don't Stand So Close to Me" being used for a deodorant.
Deodorant commercial. Yeah. You know, and Tom Waits has famously said no to everything. You know, for commercials. You know, I've turned down a couple of things where I really didn't like. Generally, it's because I didn't like. Either the people involved or the product I didn't think had anything to say, or, you know, there was one particular product which I thought was just really flat and dead, and I didn't think that any music would actually really add value to it, and so I just didn't say yes to it. But I can't,
yeah, you know, yeah. I just have a funny story, you know, our chancellor is called Angela Merkel, Angela Angie, so it's true when they had a first party convention that they used the song Angie by the Rolling Stones, and the Conservative Party in Germany got sued because they didn't want her to use the song, so she had to pay.
Well, then you have a moral right. So anyone else got any other questions?
It doesn't look like the Angie being sung by
definitely not.
Yeah, you're right, Christian, talking about the moral rights, because I wouldn't say to you, oh, go ahead for everything. Of course not. Choose quality things,
yeah.
Well done things. Try to know about what is going to be done. Don't waste the songs.
Oh, I have another story. We had one, it's many, many years ago. We represented a little Danish techno label, so we handled the publishing, which was very hard to get any publishing out of the records. So we were approached by a bank who was actually looking for a really bad piece of techno music, so I could get a license because I offered this song.
And, you know, the other side is, because let's face it, we're talking about publishing and about the income involved, and, you know, there are, I mean, I've got a new artist which I've just been taking on. I managed to get her an advert for a charity. Okay, so I do, you know, I like a bit of charity. I was a director of a charity for 6 years, so I know quite a lot about charities. And so I'd approached them about something, about the agency about something. They came back about an ad for a charity, and then we started talking about the fee. Right, so this is a little bit difficult because obviously. Should there be a fee? Shouldn't there be a fee? So my rule normally with charity things for music is who's getting paid, right? So I said, was there an agency? So who shot the film? It was so-and-so. Did they get paid? Yes, they did. who worked on the film, who edited, did they get paid as they did? The agency they approached me were being paid to provide the music for the ad. So I said, okay, so what's the deal on the music? And they're like, oh, you know, we'd like you to waive the fee. And I was like, okay, well, this is a baby artist, but she has had some, her first album did quite well. She has had some success, and I'm not willing to give it for nothing. I'm a charitable person, but I also know, I looked at the report and accounts of the charity that was involved as well, so I understood how much percentage they took for the overhead, which is another very important part for me. So I said, like, okay, in this case, because I think it's the right thing, we'll do a half fee. So we basically agreed, we waived. I did a contract where it says in the contract that the fee would normally be X thousand, but it's Y thousand because we consider it to be a charitable donation in return. And in the end, the charity agreed. And I think it was difficult for me because you have to find a path there somewhere. But I was able to find a path that the artist was happy, the charity was happy, the client was happy. We all, it's a beautiful advert as well, so it was very sympathetic to the ad. And I think we kind of found something there, which was, because there is a commercial element to all of this, but also you don't want to do the wrong thing.
Yeah. Can I just ask you a question about, because you're talking about a lot about synchronization and publishing. What happens, and what's your attitude, when the advertising agency wants to own the publishing?
No way.
Yeah.
There's two words, one of them begins with F.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this happens in Germany constantly now. I mean, if you look at the Idol show in Germany, RTL comes in and they claim 50% of the copyright. I usually reply, but, you know, the F word. If you want the song, you're paying for it.
What do you advise the small writers, though? Because you guys are publishers. What do you advise a new writer?
I mean, it's a very interesting point, because I think there are places where, you know, for instance, I know that Disney, you know, if you are commissioned to write a song for Disney, it's a 50-50 deal on the publisher. But what they offer at the back end is the exploitation of Disney. So you can factor in, you know, how much money you're going to make out of that. And I believe there is a commercial decision to be made in every case, because, you know, I also have a film and TV company, and I'm commissioning people to write music for my programs. And as part of it, I want the publishing in doing it. But the one thing that I do, because I'm a music guy, is I'm exploiting it outside and over and above the actual program that it's involved in. Because for me, it's like, there should be an added value to the copyright, and you've got to judge it. And I'm a realist. You know, I specialise in finding baby acts and make them grow. And there's a financial point in everything that we do. I can't afford to. I underwrite a lot of the costs with my acts, but there are points when we can't afford to do certain things. And there is. I think there's a moral and a financial decision to be made. And I never say to people, you know, no to everything, because if it's your baby act and the only thing you've got on the table is something where they're offering whatever and there's no other way around it, maybe you have to do that. But if there's a way of limiting it in terms of a time perspective, if there's a limited way in terms of it works, if there's like a kicker in there that if something else happens to the song after a period of time outside of the program that you get part of it back, there are ways to lessen the damage by doing that. And I think it's a case-by-case individual thing. There are times, you know, with one of the big cuts I got recently, you know, the big artist was like, can we have a share of the publishing? And I was like, no, fuck off. You know, record it the way it is, you know, or don't, that's it. But, you know, we're in a position to do that because, we've done very well with particularly the title in terms of songs.
But in Japan, it's a must. I mean, you've got to waive your fees. Because every artist is launched together with a product. But usually, if it's a great artist over there, you get it back in mechanical revenues.
And, you know, and it's, I've just done a deal with EMI in Greece for my one of my artists. And it's very interesting. When I went to Greece to meet with everyone, we met with the heads of the media companies, and I met with the live booking people, because Greece is a completely different market. It's like the Wild West. Everyone wants a share of everything. But when you're in Greece and you spend a bit of time there, you realise that's the way they do. They're Greeks. They're shipping guys who do deals all the time.
And that's where they are, where they are.
Yeah. So I quickly learned that I couldn't do my normal manager, fuck off, wouldn't it this way. I was like, okay, I did quite a unique deal with them where I changed any deal that they'd ever done before in Greece out of EMI, but I've done a deal with a live company as well being involved, and also a media company being involved as well, where everyone kind of gets a little scratch of everything else, but it's in a way of doing it where I lessen the damage that it would be, but it's the Greek way. If you've been there, that's the way they do business. All their money is underneath their beds. That's the way the Greeks do. There's a lot of money there. That's why the euro is up. Anyone else got any other questions? Anything else? We've got about 2-3 minutes left. Come on. There's one.
What's your, what do you think about synths? Do synths on songs create other synths for that same song? Or is your experience that the song gets worn out?
I mean, like I said, to be a seven synths with the same song. You know, I mean, there may be, if you're in, as someone, you know, Stephen mentioned earlier on, if you're in the wrong stinky advert, you know, for the wrongs, you know, with your song in the, an ad which everyone remembers for being crap, yeah, then you may have damaged that.
Could have been that you have other experience. We run Good Song Publishing, we publish like Alpha B, and we sync like Destination Song for all around all over Europe, and it's sort of created more and more sync for that song.
Yeah.
So it could be, could be that you had other experiences with other songs that sort of stopped.
My experience
is that they're great.
I've had a couple where they've said, you know, can you name all the other syncs that they've had? Yeah. And they get...
like a selling point.
Yeah, sometimes they throw their toys out the pram and they go, oh, it was in Austria. And you go, yeah, big fucking deal. You know, you're not selling your widgets in Austria, you're selling them somewhere else. I mean, occasionally, you know, I mean, there's a couple of things where people have wanted exclusive rights for advertising for a song. And I go, okay, fine, it's 5 times the fee. You know, if you want worldwide exclusive on that, it's 5 or 10 times the fee, or else, you know, go away. Generally, I like to think it's proving the model. Mm-hmm. And the great thing is you can send them the show reel where the song has worked in the, you know, that to be a song, so it was in a Toyota advert, Mel Coffee, telecoms ad, but it works in the different ads, and it's a great way of people seeing a show and they go, wow, that works. To picture, it's an emotional song and it drives the scene within the thing. Steve, did you ever?
No, I was just thinking that you're talking about syncs very much from a publisher's perspective, and I think from an artist and a manager's perspective, we have to look a lot broader, although I'm neither. And that you're looking very specifically at this, why is this thing? So I look at it, so I did, Urban Species did Spiritual Love with L'Oreal in France, and we said to L'Oreal, they said, we want worldwide exclusive, so we said £100,000 publishing, £100,000 recording, guaranteed 2-year contract, guaranteed you pay tour support, you pay for the band's first few videos.
Yeah.
We have preferential treatment if we can get a retail store deal. What data mining can we do? Can we get access to your website?
Yeah.
So we looked at it. The sync was the smallest part of for us.
Yeah.
And we thought, what's the positioning on this? And does it work for the track? Does it work for the band? How is it going to help us operate? When's this ad running in Australia? Can we put the tour out at the same time? Is it going to run in Japan, can we tie it in with the launch of the second single? So we try to make it a huge campaign.
Yeah.
And I think to a certain extent, I mean, it certainly worked in France where we had top 3 single, and it works in Japan and Australia probably, but there are a lot of other areas in the world where the agencies wouldn't give us the feedback on when the ad was running to allow us to use that intelligence to market the band. And that was deeply frustrating. But I just think that the discussion needs to be broader than just taking the money.
I'm sure Bremy will agree. I mean, every agency is weird. I mean, as you said, some agencies won't even give you the details of where the ad's being sold and when it's going to come out. I mean, I try and put in the contract as much as I can that they need to tell you when the ad's going to run, and you know they need to give you details. But every product, every agency, and everyone is different as to what they're expecting as a mutual relationship. Sometimes it's like they just don't want to know. They're like, you know, get fucked yourself. You know, there's the money, there's the ad, do you like it? And other times they're like really excited, like, wow, what, you actually give a shit about our ad?
Yeah.
You know, and I think you need to find that out as an early conversation. I'm like, you know, do you agree, Roman?
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring up one point because you're right in what you're saying. I think you have to look into a song, whether it's a song written for a specific band, or a song which is really connected very closely to a band, or you have a song which was written by writers for somebody else, and where we got a cut. So then we have a totally different situation, because the writers, the authors, want to make sure that they have their share in it. And once you have a campaign which is based on promoting the band and doing the best for the band, then sometimes you have to be careful that the publishing issue is not covered under the all the other interests in that. And this is, I totally agree, sometimes people want to have representing AC/DC in Germany, and when we license a song, it's because it's an AC/DC song. Nobody would be interested to have a cover version. It's the sound of AC/DC, it's Highway to Hell, whatever. So, and then the people pay for that. But sometimes you have a very strong song, which was actually recorded by different people, and it's because of the song, and then you have a different approach. But I totally agree that if this could be a part of promoting a band, then I think it's important that you have a publisher who understands that. If you just look into the money, it's difficult. I have those discussions sometimes with my writers, and sometimes that, even the matter getting money out of it, because I try to get a good price out of it. And sometimes the writers, I understand, they say, there is, big car brand coming up, and they pay a lot of money. I said, yeah, but let's negotiate, because we could get double. And they said, but if we miss that, it's better to say yes instantly. And so, but then the authors have to trust in their publishers. So it's all I can say. I'm not into a business where I don't want to make money.
Well, I think we're gonna have to wrap it up there, because the bouncers arrived.
It's
a mean motherfucker. I just want to say thanks very much to Bella, Jens, Marcus, and Remy. Thank you very much.